Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to an emergency episode of Much Ado About Wrestling, the show that considers invading other podcasts constantly. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, returning to TNT for the first time since 2001, is Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you?
I'm good, man. What was I on TNT for in 2001?
I think you closed the very last episode of Nitro in a match against Ric Flair wearing a t-shirt,
excellent,
if I remember correctly.
Excellent. That time, Ric Flair fought an 11-year-old kid.
You would have been all about that, I feel
oh,
like.
Oh, absolutely. I'd have loved it.
Hello, fair listeners. You haven't heard from us in a little while.
Yes.
Part of that is due to COVID fatigue. Part of that is due to the holidays. And part of that is due to technical difficulties.
Yes.
That's right. We have the second ever lost episode.
We have another lost episode. We are stacking those up a little more than I would prefer, but hey.
Yeah. But we are now taking precautions so that that will not happen again. But we are back. We're ready for WrestleMania season is around the bend, shockingly. Although we're going to be talking in this mini emergency episode mostly about AEW. Really quickly, for a few minutes at the top, we wanted to talk about the passing of Pat Patterson. Mm-hmm. He passed away this week at the age of 79. Was a longtime employee of WWE and wore a lot of different hats. What does Pat Patterson mean to you, Tyler?
Man, Pat Patterson, well, just going off what I know about Pat Patterson, he was the very first ever Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Patterson was, again, he's been a backstage guy for many, many, many years. He's had a hand in a lot of our favorite matches that we've talked about on this podcast. I was doing some research today. I saw that he was one of the major players in Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 21.
Oh, I didn't know that actually. Mm-hmm. That he was like an agent at that point.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pat Patterson. Oh, he was also one of the first openly gay professional wrestlers.
Yeah.
I believe coming out back in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah,
like
I think, I don't know if he like really like had like a coming out moment. I think
people just knew
that like he wasn't, if we were like, hey Pat, are you gay? He'd be like, yes.
Yeah.
I think
exactly.
That's kind of like how it was.
He didn't make a big moment of it, but he wasn't keeping it secret by any means.
No. He's also like, as a creative mind, he's someone who was at the side of Vince McMahon for a long, long time, which then he turned into an on-air character as the Stooge in the,
yeah,
the 90s in the Attitude Era, where he became a comedy wrestler. Mm-hmm. But I think like he'll have a indelible legacy on wrestling and on WWE specifically because he also created the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
Came up with that concept, which I think is like one of the few match type like gimmick types that is a like WWE in-house creation.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about that, him being the first Intercontinental Champion, for a second, because I also learned recently that was entirely kayfabed.
Oh, really?
Wow. Okay, so he was the WWWF North American Heavyweight Champion.
Mm-hmm.
Which was their short-lived secondary title.
Yeah.
Which they retired, and they had Pat become the first Intercontinental Champion, which was supposed to be a champion of both North America and South America.
Mm-hmm.
which is why we had always heard about, like, well, Pat Patterson won in a tournament final against Johnny Rods in Brazil. That never happened.
I was like, do we hear that?
Yeah, that was like a thing where it was like listed as like he won it in the tournament final in Brazil, and that tournament never happened. They were like, no one will ever go to Brazil and try to fact check this. So that is how the Intercontinental Championship became like a thing. But I think Pat Patterson, like the first thing that people, younger fans, kind of know is like first Intercontinental Champion. So Pat will be missed. He had a kind of a complicated, he had both good and bad things about his personal life. I think he would be championed more as the first openly gay WWE wrestler if he hadn't also had his fair share of like hushed up backstage sexual harassment lawsuits. But that's also part of who he was. So I'm going to go from that negative to a positive and say rest in peace, Pat Patterson,
yes,
at the age of 79. Peace. There aren't really a lot of people in the business like him. So moving from that to AEW's Winter is Coming, the most recent, as in like last night, of the AEW television show specials, if you want to call it that.
I'm a fan of these special things. Like,
me too.
They advertise them like as pay-per-views, but they aren't just episodes of Dynamite. So it's a way to mix it up without, you know, having to have to go through an entire pay-per-view and all that stuff. So I'm a fan.
Yeah, I think this has been a result too of the of AEW and NXT being directly against each other, that they have to do pay-per-view worthy things on television more often, just to try to get eyeballs. But I like that both companies have been doing these kind of specials, like with Halloween Havoc as well in NXT.
Yeah.
They've had a few others. We could talk about other things on the show, but since this is a mini episode, there are two moments in particular that were noteworthy on this show that we're going to talk about. And we, Tyler, you and I have not told each other explicitly how we feel about these events yet, but we kind of have a feeling we might be on total opposite
parts
of the fence.
We just might.
So this is going to be fun.
Sure. So do you want to go straight to the moments or like just run the whole card, how we feel about
if
it?
If you want to do some light talk about the
sure.
about the rest of the card, and then we'll talk about the two moments.
So,
like, what were your thoughts on the undercard of this show?
So the top, I'm going to go right from the Battle Royal for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. This was a great match. I thought it was a lot of fun. I've heard directly from our AEW correspondent that this was her favorite match of the night.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this wasn't really a show that stood out for having its matches, actually. Like, moments really were the thing, not matches.
But I thought it was a good match. I'm super excited for OC MJF. OC is getting that ring. And my thought is, like, they had to give him something, because how are you going to make Orange Cassidy lose three TNT championship matches in a row and then not give him anything?
Yeah.
So
he did get a win over John Silver at Full Gear.
Yes. Yeah.
Which you would have heard us talk about if that episode wasn't lost.
Right. Yeah. That's true. That's true. But I'm glad that he won the Battle Royal and that he's going to be in the match. I honestly, for the split second, because I was also fooled in that OC was on the outside at the end. Like, I was also fooled. So when it came down to Wardlow and MJF, I had a split second of being like, oh, this is a great matchup.
Yeah.
MJF or Wardlow for the ring. Like, wow, that's great storytelling. But I'm also happy with how it ended.
I think that legitimately surprised is like a thing we're going to say a few times about this episode.
Yes.
I'm happy with how it ended. I think Orange Cassidy is really difficult to book, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is maybe the most popular act on the show, but you, as a booker, you diminish his value, or maybe it's more fair to say you diminish the value of other people by having him in the main event constantly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this teetering act of how do we keep this super popular guy prominent but not in a position
yeah.
where he's he's seriously considered as the main event contender.
And but also it's a weird thing of like the more high profile matches you're going to put him in, and the more opportunities you have for him to like display himself as a real professional wrestler, that in turn like takes away from his entire gimmick of the mm-hmm. aloof guy. So it's a weird tightrope that they have to walk with that character.
Yeah, because like he's been living as this character for quite a long time before mm-hmm. AEW was around too. But now the number of shows and number of people who have seen the gimmick is going up exponentially.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you keep that fresh? So maybe he won't always be this Orange Cassidy of the current. And I trust him as a performer to, if he feels that the orange juice is getting stale, to like pulp it up, you know, to mm-hmm. to add some layers. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I'm trying to just like bask in what is good right now about yeah. it and enjoy the ride.
sure. Yeah. I am looking forward to the fun stories they can tell of Orange Cassidy losing the diamond ring, or forget it, leaving it at home, or
mm-hmm. yeah. If he won it and literally just like didn't know where it was,
yeah,
that would be a fun thing. And then to have like MJF try to help him find it, just because he wants like it's bad enough not to have it, but if no one has it, that's exactly. like the worst thing that could be happening. Yeah, that could be a lot of fun.
I like it.
What else stood out from the undercard for you?
Oh boy, let's see. I want to talk about the matches not involved in the major points that we need to talk about. Britt Baker versus Layla Hirsch was fine. Mm-hmm. I'm just waiting for them to finally pull the trigger on Britt and put her in the main event picture. I'm thinking they're just waiting until the right time, I guess, which now we know now that Abaddon is going to be the next contender mm-hmm. For the women's title, which is cool. I think that's an interesting storyline they can tell. I'm curious how they're going to execute it, because the promo they did with Hikaru Shida pretending to be like scared backstage from the random noise that yeah. happened, like that's
a little clumsy.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to when Britt Baker is finally going to be pushed and you can put the belt on her, because like I think that's gonna, as much as I love Hikaru Shida, having a female champion who can talk as well as Britt can, like I think it's only going to do good for that division.
Yeah, I think that's going to be important for the women's division going forward for AEW.
Yeah.
But I think they're, depending on how one of the other big things from this episode falls out, I feel like the women's division could be instantly beefed up pretty soon.
That is true. That is true.
But we'll get to that. I really like the idea of, I don't know if I loved the Kaz Jericho match, but I like the mm-hmm. idea of Jericho putting an ultimatum of the inner circle
yeah.
has to either come together as a family or break up, and I feel like that's going to lead to some fun pre-taped vignettes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I'm excited for it. I feel like it's almost too soon. Like we just got the new like an improved inner circle, yeah.
which is why I think they won't ultimately break up. But we'll see. That's another one where I want to kind of just like sit back and enjoy. What
just sit back and watch. Yeah.
Me. Yeah. I think
we got to talk about the big ones now.
Yeah, I think we've gone through kind of everything else that happened on the show. Besides Eddie Kingston continuing his storyline against Excalibur.
So the tag match, we got the TNT champion Darby Allin and
the face of TNT.
The face of TNT, the half of the face of TNT.
Yeah.
And the Prince of Pro Wrestling, Cody Rhodes, versus Team Taz. We got Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. This is, mm-hmm. I guess, his new moniker.
Just Hobbs. Yeah.
Just Hobbs.
I don't know if it's they said Hobbs a lot. They
I'm pretty sure like on his like name tag it said Powerhouse Hobbs.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just his new moniker. I'm cool with that.
I want Team Taz to also get Samuel Shaw now, so they can be Hobbs and Shaw.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
I want it. But it was good. Honestly, the match itself was perfectly fine. It was a pretty good match. They told a great story of Darby just being manhandled by Hobbs the whole match, just trying to get to that tag for Cody. Eventually got it. Cody hits Starks in the ring, I think, with the Crossroads, makes the suicide dive to the outside to stop Hobbs. Darby hits the coffin drop, gets the pinfall. It was the aftermath, of course, as it always is. It was the main news point here. Team Taz swarms the ring. They start attacking Darby and Cody. Dustin comes out for the save, eventually gets beaten down as well.
Arn even gets beaten down.
Arn gets beaten down. Arn's taking some shots. And then we get the lights out. And from there, paint me a picture, Andrew, of
be happy
what
to.
Happened.
The lights go out. The video board comes on, and we get some pastoral images. We get the moniker of the show that winter is coming, and it's like, uh-oh, I guess winter is a person. It's like August Warning in Impact back in the day, but this was actually like a good reveal. So it's like, oh, winter is about to be here. Who is winter? And then walking out amidst a very good-looking group of fake snow.
Yes,
that was a really cool touch.
I wanted to say, like, that entrance, like, of among the fake snowfall was like super cool. That was probably my favorite part of the whole thing.
It was my favorite part of the whole thing. But then we got I know we don't normally curse on this show, but I'm going to quote Renee Young in her reaction to what happened, where she said, because coming out through the snow was, it's fucking Sting.
That's great.
So the icon Sting made the save, had a stare down, a really well-framed stare down with Darby Allin.
Yes.
And Tony Schiavone got to say, it's Sting, recalling nostalgia. And this was the return of Sting to TNT, first time since 2001, which I think is the last time you were on Nitro.
What are the chances?
So he returns to the company. So he was added to the roster page. There was an immediate press release, an immediate merchandise that was put out for AEW and Sting. So the first question I have for you, Tyler, is how did they pull this off without anybody knowing?
Oh man. I think it helped in that I don't think anyone, and like we talked about this last night, like I don't think many people picked up on the idea that Winter is Coming, that title, was an allusion to maybe someone is coming, like there could be a debut or something.
Yeah, so it was hidden pretty well in just the idea that like doing an outdoor show in the winter is going to be tougher.
Yeah, so I don't think many people were expecting a debut, a surprise debut at that. And also Sting, and this was one of my first thoughts, was like, I'm pretty sure Sting is retired due to injury and like cannot wrestle. So
he quietly had his WWE Legends contract expire a little more than a year ago. So I think also like the fact that this wasn't like immediately after that contract went up also hid. No one was talking about Sting.
No one.
For good reason.
So what did you think of the shirt though? Because honestly, like,
the shirt's the best.
It's a cool shirt. But the second I saw him wearing an AEW branded Sting shirt, like immediately I knew. I was like, oh, they signed Sting. Like this isn't all elite.
I think the shirt's cool because I think there's a subtle thing on the shirt where the shape of the entire logo and emblem is the exact same shape as the old Nitro logo.
Oh, okay.
Or if it's not exactly the same, it's pretty close.
It's reminiscent of that. It makes you think that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Sting is the version of Sting that is the Crow is always just going to be a cool visual character, right? Even into old age. I actually like that Sting had naturally gray hair for the first time too out there. Like I thought, like he's really been dying it a lot to continue to be black, but I like that it's like to go with the idea of winter is coming, that Sting is like grizzled.
We have an old grizzled
old Logan.
Old Sting.
Yeah, with his bat. Yeah, I thought that the optics of it are great, and like the look of him looking at Cody and at Arn, who he has history with, is fine. But really, the like seeing him and Darby looking at each other, I was like, oh, this is actually the pairing that I want to see. And like the idea of Darby being referred to so recently as the face of TNT makes more sense if they knew that Sting, who was the face of wrestling on TNT for years and years and years, was going to come and kind of groom Darby, which was is what I assume is going to happen.
That was what I was getting as well. Like, we're gonna potentially see a mentorship here of Sting mentoring Darby. I heard some people like spitballing like maybe Sting's gonna challenge Darby for the TNT title because Sting is Mr. TNT, so like that's a maybe, but I'm leaning more towards this mentorship possibility. I definitely love that stare down that they did. I'm glad that the cinematography of it, they chose to film it from the side of Darby's face that wasn't painted.
Yes.
Like there's so much like weird symbolism that you can pull from that I was like, oh, that was a good choice.
Yeah, I thought it was clear that they had somehow rehearsed this without any information about it leaking, which is nuts. I think this is one of the first big touchstone moments for AEW on weekly TV. Like, this is like, I think we talk about a lot about like what is going to make the video packages, right? What's going to make the best of DVDs, like in a world where DVDs were still a thing, like this this would be one of them. What are the potential positives and negatives to bringing Sting onto the AEW roster?
So I think we can break this down in a completely non-biased way.
Yeah.
But I want to get your potential dissension we have here. What was your overall take on Sting's debut?
I thought the debut itself was really cool.
Okay.
I thought. And I am happy to see Sting involved in AEW, but I have a big worry in the back of my mind that I think is maybe the same worry that's at the front of your mind.
Okay, so.
But I thought, like, as a moment, great, and I think there are a lot of things that Sting can bring to the table outside of a wrestling capacity.
Yes, and I agree with a lot of those points. I want to walk you through this. This is my like immediate reactions watching it last night when it happened. So lights go out, the winter is coming promo thing comes up, and in my mind I'm like, oh, are we getting a debut? I was like, who on the roster already could make an impact by showing up right now? And then I was like, oh, maybe it's a new debut, maybe something like that. And I don't know why, but the second like the music kicked in, and I know it's not the same, it's just like sort of similar, I was like, ah, what if it's Sting?
Oh, yeah, the music gave it away. Like, the music sounded very like
it was similar it was enough in my mind. Yeah, I was like, ah, what if it's Sting? And then the thought fled my mind, and I was like, who is this? Who could it possibly be? And then Sting came out, and I'm gonna be honest, my immediate thought, I was like, dude, Sting is old as fuck.
He's 61. He's 18 years younger than the recently deceased Pat Patterson.
Sting is old, and I'm sorry. Like, the gray hair was a cool touch. Like, it was an old grizzled Sting, but it did not work for me because I was just like, God, he is so old. Like, why? Why? And I'm still operating under the assumption, like, Sting is injured. He's done. He can't wrestle. So if you're bringing – and then I saw the T-shirt, and I was like, if you're telling me you signed Sting to this company, probably for a very expensive contract, to not wrestle, like, come on, guys. Like, I honestly – I was not the biggest fan of it. I thought it was a cool moment. It was a really cool debut. Again, with the snow falling and everything, was aesthetically pleasing. But in the moment, I was not a fan. I was like, this is not what AEW needs. Like, yeah.
Yeah, this could be a future problem. This could be like Ric Flair and Hogan and Bischoff coming to Impact when it was at its hottest and flushing it down the toilet.
But now approaching this from a non-biased angle, what are the pros and cons?
Well, an immediate pro is name recognition, eyeballs, and merchandise sales. Our AEW correspondent gave us this information right before coming on air that the 24-hour period is not up yet, but Sting has sold, the AEW Sting shirt has sold more units than any other shirt in a 24-hour period in the history of pro wrestling tees. So, clearly, people, if you worried if Sting was still a draw in 2020, the answer is yes.
The answer
At least in terms of like merchandise sales. I think there's a huge positive as just like a spokesperson for AEW, as someone who, you know, the AEW tries to teeter the line between nostalgia and like the future.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, that was the MO for Impact, for TNA back in the day when it was at its heyday, and they did the wrong thing. They had Ric Flair come in.
They leaned too hard into the nostalgia part.
Yeah, they had him turn people into the Four Horsemen, and they had Ric Flair turning AJ into like a limousine drive-in robe wearing copy of him. I think that Sting could do a lot as the mentor for Darby Allin, but I don't want to see Darby have Sting's face paint or start Sting's bat, right? Like, they don't need that. That is where Impact took the step too far, I think.
Yeah.
And so if Sting was just there as a mentor, but Darby still brought his skateboard instead of the bat.
Yeah.
He still got to be himself. Darby
Allin. Because, you can't build this new company off a 61-year-old guy. We need new stars, we need new presences and new characters. So I agree. I like this potential mentorship of Sting mentoring Darby. I think that there's really cool storytellings in there, but Darby Allin needs to be the focus here.
Yeah. And I think that I'm going to give AEW the benefit of the doubt right now, because they've shown that they've paired up other nostalgic wrestlers as managers for younger wrestlers to a positive impact so far with Jake the Snake and with Team Taz. The other issue is that, like, if Sting is coming in to help the Rhodes family against Team Taz, it's a little weak to me because Taz and Sting don't have any relationship to each other. It'd be nice if they did. But then it might not matter that much.
Yeah, I would almost hope that Sting coming in is almost going to have nothing to do with this Rhodes Family Team Taz feud. Yeah. I would want Sting to come in, take Darby out of that feud to go do their own thing.
Yeah,
like I think that works much better for me.
It'd be great to like continue. I mean, okay, hold on. Let's put on our booking hats. Like, it'd be great to continue the Darby versus Cody feud, because right now they're on the same side, right?
Yeah.
And we know that Cody's favorite wrestler growing up was not his dad, it was Sting. And we know that Cody's coach, Arn Anderson, was always Sting's nemesis. So if Cody's trying to be a good guy and trying to help out the kid who beat him, and then his favorite wrestler pulls him away from him, then we have a great match between Darby and Cody with Sting and Arn Anderson in the corners. And like that is a WrestleMania like match, basically.
Brilliant.
So hopefully that's what they're gonna do.
Hopefully that's where they're headed.
What are the potential awful negatives to having Sting on the roster?
I mean, we've already addressed them. This idea that AEW has always touted themselves as being the future of pro wrestling, and they want to build new stars rather than rely too heavily upon nostalgia acts like WWE does all the time. And I agree, they have been walking that line very well up until this point of like, we have just enough nostalgia to get people interested, and
I should have thrown Tully Blanchard in there too, also doing a good job.
they have just enough nostalgia to get some eyes on the product and things like that while also building their new stars. But the potential con here is that you are...
The Tony con?
I know. the potential con here is that you are relying too much on these nostalgia acts, and specifically for someone like Sting, again, who there's no guarantee that Sting can or will wrestle a match. Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine how much they had to pay Sting to sign him on a multi-year deal. So, and again, I don't know anything about the Khan's, you know, finances here.
Oh, they're healthy.
I'm sure they're healthy. I'm sure they're doing great. But I'm also sure at some point Papa Khan is going to be like real tired of giving Tony this money and not seeing any returns.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
This 2020 has been a hard year on businesses everywhere, especially professional wrestling. So I can imagine that AEW, maybe at best they've broken even this year because they also didn't have the same expenses.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking of like the financial aspect of like, it's not a good idea to spend probably a butt ton of money to sign this nostalgia act to a multi-year deal who's probably not going to be able to wrestle for you. So I don't know. I'm curious if the nostalgia aspect of people wanting to see Sting and tuning in for Sting is going to pay off in the end.
If his contract is big for a appearance contract, if it's not like big for a performer contract, then I think it's okay.
Yeah,
and I think that's a distinction that we don't know what it is. I think the biggest potential negative is like, and not to like be overly dramatic, but like Sting dying in the ring. Like if they're gonna
worst
put him
case
in a
scenario,
match,
like
he had one of the scariest career ending injuries that I've ever seen in any sport, right? In his match against Seth Rollins, where it's like, oh, his neck and his back basically broke, and he couldn't move.
I've seen WWE do kayfabe storylines of that happening in the ring, and it's scary enough that when you know it's being faked. Like,
now I know that we live in a world where medical science can do a lot, because like the fact that Edge is now wrestling matches at like 100% speed is mind-boggling.
And I'm pretty sure did Edge have the exact same injury that Sting has?
I don't know if
it's exactly
necks.
The same, but I'm pretty sure it's extremely similar, because that's what I read, that Sting has a potential to come back as an active wrestler.
Sting had the same injury as Paige. I know that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing, is that Sting is also so much older than
that's
these
true.
Other people
that
we've
is
talked
true.
About. And like, Sting as an old guy has always been more mobile than the other old guys wrestling,
that's true.
Right? But still, like... I hope he doesn't wrestle.
Honestly, I don't want him to wrestle. I really don't.
And Meltzer said, when asked about this, that he's not going to be taking bumps, but that there will be some physicality in his role.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what that means. Does it mean like he could be in a match, but literally like just be tagged in to like his finisher
and
win?
You could put him in a six-man, I guess, and like... He could foreseeably put someone in the Scorpion Deathlock without taking any kind of bump or any kind of damage. Maybe I don't know if he can still hit a Stinger Splash. Like, that looks like it takes a lot of, you know, work on
back.
Your end. But he could foreseeably do a spot like that, but I don't see him doing a singles match anytime soon.
Yeah. I feel like he could be valuable in the William Regal like authority figure role, honestly. Like, it would be a different type of person to have like a face-painted weirdo in that role.
It'd be
like,
weird
like,
for Sting, who doesn't talk much and like has to announce matches and stuff.
Yeah, but that would be funny to have him just like come to the ring and like someone is trying not to be put into a match and it's like, please, I don't want to do it, and he just doesn't say anything. He's like, no, really, I don't want to do it. And then Sting still says nothing, and the guy's like, okay, fine, I'll do it. Like
I want Sting to announce a War Games match by just pointing to a sign that says War Games.
Yeah.
And then still getting the same Adam Cole style reaction from someone.
I don't know. So we're gonna see how Sting is used, but we both hope that it is lightly. at least like in the physical sense. Okay, we got to move on to the main event. Do you want to walk us through, for those who didn't see, what happened in our main event of Kenny Omega versus AEW World Champion John Moxley?
Yes. So I want to preface this. AEW, I think it's on their official YouTube video, they released another one of these like 10-15 minute promo videos beforehand, literally just hyping up Omega versus Moxley.
Yeah.
And it was a great deep dive into not only this current feud but their history in AEW's history itself. Mm-hmm. It was a great piece to watch before this video, so you get the entire story leading up to this.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend it, even watching it now post match. But so we get the world title match. I definitely noticed at this point, like, they were trying to layer up as many commercial breaks as possible before this main event, so they could do as few as possible during the main event.
The picture in picture was frequent.
Yes. And so we got the entrances. I've been telling Sarah this every week. I have not been a fan of this weird new entrance that Kenny's doing.
Yeah.
It's like funny and entertaining, like the silly facts that they read off, and like I'm okay with that. And like the dancing girls coming out with the brooms, like
they were absent for this match.
They were absent for this one,
which I thought was the right call.
Yeah,
and I agree with you that they should have just like Justin Roberts still should have done all the facts, but they should have been actually like intimidating.
Yeah,
facts.
Yeah. But I've just been confused by this entrance thing lately. I don't understand it. But so we got the same sort of thing. Sans the dancing girls, which again was a good choice. Kenny comes out first, and then we get Moxley's entrance. Moxley coming from the backstage area, walking specifically down the aisle where we saw him attacked not 2 weeks ago, which I thought was a great touch. Mox enters from the arena, as he always does, makes his way down to the ring, and we're getting ready for the match. Of course, we go to an immediate commercial break.
Yeah.
But by the time we come back, we're ready to start the match. I also picked up these entrances were happening at about 9:18, 9:20.
Mm-hmm.
And so immediately I was like, oh, wow, they're going to give this match some time. Yeah. They got a good 35 minutes here.
And they did the fun thing on social media and then on commentary multiple times referenced that TNT was allowing the show to run over if it went up against the 60 minute time limit.
Yep.
So
I did pick up on that. They were like, this match is a 60 limit time limit. If the match exceeds our television time, we will keep it right here. And I was like, oh, okay, we'll see. So it was great leading up to that. The match starts. And again, the story that they had been building upon leading up to this was a story that Kenny had been saying, that I am not the best street fighter in the world. I'm the best professional wrestler in the world. Mm-hmm. And you and I have not had a professional wrestling match yet. We've had these street fights and these brawls and stuff. But if you and I had a regular match, there's no way you could beat me. And that was the story they tried to tell, in that Kenny was the more technical, more faster wrestler, and Moxley had his brute power and just the brutality in general. I recognize there was a point where they were on the outside for a while, just working around the guardrails and then getting thrown over those and just like doing their spots and stuff out there, which were fine. They're a good, like, you know, time killer.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually the story of the match working in that Kenny started to work over Moxley's leg, and using his speed and more technical prowess. And I enjoyed that storytelling, because a lot of those spots, that's when you got to see those hints of like old school Kenny Omega, who's just like lightning quick.
Yeah.
I saw there was one spot where he did a springboard from the outside to the inside, but off the springboard hits a drop kick to Moxley's knee.
And that felt like New Japan to me.
And I was like, whoa, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
But so it was good. They were telling that story. I things like missing some of the finer points, but some of the good moments. I loved Moxley bringing in the two chairs, thinking, oh, he's gonna hit Kenny, and then sets up the two chairs in the ring and just sits down and like offers the seat to Kenny. I thought that was like a little silly, but good enough to lead to the point where them smacking each other back and forth led to Kenny hitting a V trigger while Moxley was in the chair.
That was the best like move of the match.
That looks so cool.
Do you mind if I jump in for a second?
No, please go ahead.
I think that was the moment when John brought in the chairs that we should have realized that something was up, and that the story that we had been prepped for of like, you're going to have this potentially 60-minute New Japan styled athletic contest was a red herring, right?
Yeah.
It was like, we're going to set you up for this expectation and we're not going to deliver on that expectation. And that could be disastrous, but we're banking on the storytelling thing that we've hidden being equally as enjoyable. So then we get to that. Do you want to keep, or do you want me to take over at this
point?
Please,
you can go ahead.
Yeah. So then we get a big beat where there is a botch in the match, but I think that they worked pretty well to get back on course, where Kenny goes up to the top rope and is supposed to be pushed into the nearby ringside heating system and like burns his face. And
but
then, can't continue the match. But
he can get pushed.
Yeah, Kenny the Performer fell, and John Moxley, to his credit, did an amazing job at, calling on the fly a natural-looking way to get back into that position.
Yes.
So Kenny goes into the heater. His eyes are burning, and Kenny's best friend, Don Callis.
His uncle,
yeah. Also a executive in Impact Wrestling, is on commentary, just like he was at Full Gear. He comes rushing in to look at Kenny's well-being. The match is restarted. Don tries to get on the microphone to tell them that Kenny can't fight. And he drops the mic, distracts the referee, and Kenny breaks the gentleman's agreement, spikes John in the head with the microphone, and then dominates the rest of the match and becomes your new AEW World Champion.
Hits about 15 V-triggers.
a lot of V-triggers in a row. And decisively then wins in a dirty way. So now Kenny Omega is the full-blown heel champion of AEW.
Yes.
Here's where things get interesting. They, and by they I mean Kenny and Don, rush out of the ring, rush to the backstage, past Tony Khan in gorilla position with the title. It's like they're running away at the end of The Graduate.
Yes.
And they run past all of these people backstage, and they are running out of the building because they know that what they've done is not up to snuff. And they get caught for an interview before getting into a car and leaving. And this is the big bombshell moment of the show, that Don says, well, we'll tell you what's going on Tuesday. And Alex is like, the interviewer is like, well, Dynamite's on Wednesdays. And he's like, yeah, but Impact is on Tuesdays. So, we are going to have Kenny Omega, the AEW champion, on next week's edition of Impact Wrestling.
Yes.
What was your immediate reaction to that?
Immediate reaction. How the hell do I watch Impact?
On Axis. Or you can watch it on Twitch. They do a really good job of making their show easy to watch if you don't have cable. I think it's also funny that they left Pop a few years ago because they were like, this isn't a real network, and then Pop got Schitt's Creek, which became bona fide hit.
So I was also torn on this. Ultimately, again, it's another situation of I've had some time to think on it, and I think this is a great decision. But in the moment, I was a little upset in that this was to be Kenny's crowning moment of finally getting the AEW World Championship. So I was not the biggest fan of the, for lack of a better word, the fuckery going on.
Yeah, the dirty finish.
Yeah, the dirty finish and stuff. So I wasn't the biggest fan of that. I think what they were going for was this, and commentary was trying to sell it when Kenny and Don were running through the back to get outside. on commentary, they were saying the term. They were like, this is a screw job.
Yeah.
This is a screw
job. I didn't agree that it was a screw job. It was that just was a my dirty thing. Finish. Yeah.
I was like, I think what you guys are trying to paint this as isn't matching what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
I see what you're going for, and that's cool. Like, it's an interesting story, but it didn't come across that way to me. And specifically, like, the two of them running through the backstage, and like there was like specific part where there was like 10 or 15 just people back there being like, where are you going? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, like, their reaction is not matching what happened in the ring.
Yeah.
It did just look like a dirty finish rather than like, oh, this was a screw to TNA. Impact Wrestling screwed AEW. Like,
they needed the people ringside to start vehemently booing so that the live audience would boo Kenny Omega becoming champion, because they weren't on board ready to do that yet.
No. Because the live audience, who adores Kenny Omega, up immediately was like, oh my God, Kenny's the champion. Awesome.
Yeah.
So I see what they are going for, and having the day to process it and think about it, I think it's a great decision. My first gripe was, so we're gonna have a working relationship with Impact. That's cool, but my first gripe is, what does AEW get out of this?
I have a thought on that.
Please.
And it's something that we talked about in our now lost episode, where we also talked about AEW games, where I made a passing comment where I was like, I would love for them to get a working relationship with other companies that will never have video games again, so that you can have a general manager mode, so that you could have other, you know, for lack of a better term, like, big independent wrestlers in it. And I think I name checked, like, well, Don Callis was at Full Gear, so maybe they'll strike up something with Impact. So maybe when AEW's video game comes out, it will have wrestlers from both companies and maybe some other companies in it. And I think like as a merchandising exchange, I think there's a lot to be gained. And like, the one thing that there's a lot of things AEW doesn't have that WWE has. But a big thing is, like, history, right? They don't have a huge video library that they can make a network out of. But you know who does?
Impact Wrestling.
And it includes most of the current WWE stars.
Yeah.
So I think there's, if you can find a way where they're actually giving each other revenue. But that sounds closer to, like, a merger, which I don't think is anywhere near being.
Yeah.
But like, that is like a common thing. Like, you see in like industries, like, well, like in the industry that I work in, I think we all know, I think we've mentioned that I work in publishing. The major publishing house, Penguin Random House, just bought Simon & Schuster last week. And I feel like it happens more often, where like there is a huge conglomerate at the top, like WWE, and the only way you can compete is by the mid-tier companies merging together. So this isn't exactly that, but it could lead to something like that. I want to give a quick history of cross promotion in pro wrestling, because I think it frames just how crazy this as a occurrence is.
Yes.
So in the 90s, WWE had ECW on a few episodes of Raw, and also like helped finance them, right? WCW did some talent exchanges with New Japan in the 90s. The WWE Network has co-promoted shows with Evolve. And in the 90s, WWE also had a NWA invasion angle with Dan Severn and Jim Cornette for a little while. But the thing about all of those cross-promotions is that the lesser company didn't have a national television show at that time. And like, once ECW was on TNN, their promotion with WWE stopped. So this is the very first time that we've had two networks that have a weekly running syndicated television show, like on national cable, are going to be trading their talent. So that energizes me as a wrestling fan for the possibilities. It feels like you could do what we all hoped the WWE WCW invasion was going to be.
Yeah. You get a redo at potentially like one of the biggest professional wrestling flubs in history.
Yeah. But it is hard to like book around two companies because someone's going to have to win or lose, you
exactly.
would think, right?
Yeah.
And I know AEW isn't going to want them to be the yeah. losers.
Well, so like that kind of is a little of my point of like off, like just looking at it from the immediate idea is what does AEW stand to gain in terms of star power? Like the AEW world champion, Kenny Omega, showing up on Impact Wrestling. Impact is probably going to do the best numbers it ever has or yeah. has in a long time next week.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't think of a single person in Impact who showing up on AEW is going to do that much. I mean,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know who they have at the moment that fits that bill on like a big, big name. But
yeah.
you have people who are interesting, right? I think
right.
the women's division could really benefit from
oh, yeah.
Su Yang
yeah.
or Jordana Grace or
Taya Valkyrie. Or...
Yeah, like, and Deanna Purrazzo. Like, there are a lot of people that could immediately be really, you know, pun intended, impactful on the AEW side. I mean, people really want to see the Bullet Club versus Bullet Club match that we never
yeah.
got. Of, I mean, that might be the biggest.
That's probably the biggest
thing
one
that
right
they
now.
Have to gain
yeah.
is Gallows and Anderson versus the Young Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And you've also got, I mean, this isn't like it. I don't know if this is going to move the needle, but you got a big rematch that people want to see of Sammy Callahan and John Moxley just doing crazy things to each
oh,
other.
Oh yeah,
like that could be huge.
That would be good.
Bucks
just...
and Motor City Machine Guns.
You could do Brian Cage could have some matches mm-hmm. with some people throwing that back.
We also didn't mention that like the patron saint of TNA Impact, Sting, is now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a coincidence that Sting also returned on
yeah.
on the same night that Impact became you know, a part of the equation.
Canon.
Yeah, yeah. So, and there's also a few now recently ex-WWE people who are in Impact who can bring some more name
yeah.
recognition to the show. But it is more of like a, here are even younger people who we can make stars out of.
Yeah.
I mean, Cody was in TNA for a while. So.
Oh my God. Wow. I
yeah.
forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, again, like I think there's definitely potential here that I'm more excited about now. It's interesting. I'm just it's the same thing. Like I'm just curious. Like I just want to sit back and see what you got for me.
Yeah.
My thing that I enjoy most about this, and this was the point, like my original idea of like what does AEW stand to gain, and I saw in one of the forums I was on, someone made a post that really actually made it clear for me, that turned me around, was that. From the beginning of AEW, their mission has always been to be an alternative to WWE and to change the professional wrestling business
mm-hmm.
and make it better for everyone across the board. And having a working relationship between AEW, Impact Wrestling, AAA, potentially New Japan, potentially Ring of Honor, like that just makes the business better for everyone going forward. So
yeah.
they are following through with what they said. Maybe it took them a while to get there. Maybe they wanted to like tell an intriguing story to get there, but they're following through and the potential is excellent.
I think you actually, yeah, you gave me an idea of what AEW really potentially has to gain is that they could do a annual super card that is like, I know this is already the
yeah.
name of a Ring of Honor show, but you could do Best in the World minus
mm-hmm.
WWE. Like if everyone else literally joins
yeah.
forces to do a super show, and then AEW could still treat All In or Full Gear or Double or Nothing as their like as the premier AEW show, but you could
mm-hmm.
do this huge thing that if you pull all of their forces, they could have a super show to rival WrestleMania every year.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe Scott Steiner will show up with that siren in the back.
I would hope so. I want him to be the authority figure of AEW.
Yes, please.
Doing some math. The Young Bucks did say in a post-show interview last night that, quote, that this partnership has been in the works for quite some time and that more surprises are on the way. So what do you, like, what do you think, what do you expect to happen with Don and Kenny as the catalyst for the storyline on Impact next week?
So I've heard a lot of, again, other theories of, like, where they're going with this. And it's one of the theories I saw was this idea that Kenny taking the AEW World Championship to Impact, you need a way to establish Kenny as a heel champion. And that's extremely difficult when Kenny Omega is as beloved as he is by the fans. So you need a definitive heel move that would make people want to boo Kenny Omega. And what better way than have him triumphantly win this championship for this brand new wrestling company that's supposed to change the face of the business, and then take that title to a different company.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I get it. Like, that's a good idea. And then ultimately, like, in a perfect world, we could wrap this around in like a year or 2 years and have Hangman Page beat Kenny and take the title back.
Yeah, be like the savior for AEW.
And be the savior for AEW and be like the, you know, the crowning achievement of this savior, and he can finally be the hero he was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But that's all fantasy booking. But
I mean, that's all that we got at this point.
That's all we got at this point.
I really don't have any inclination of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I kind of hope that it's not a like TNA roster versus AEW.
No, I don't want that either.
I think if Kenny wants to become this global supervillain, I think, you know, apologies to new Impact champion Rich Swann, but I think Kenny should go win the Impact title too. And I think that would be good for both companies.
Well, he's still the AAA world champion.
That too. And then maybe a year from now, if they get the working relationship up with New Japan, maybe he goes back and tries to be literally the world champion of everywhere that
of
matters
the world.
Outside of WWE, right?
Wow. That's wild. Yeah, I mean, I think there, again, the potentials here are super cool. Another theory I saw was, what if the person who attacked Moxley 2 weeks ago, what if now we can insert a Impact star into that role? What if we inserted Sami Callihan?
That would
that
be
role?
Perfect. That's the only person I'd want to see as in that role, honestly.
So like the potentials here for the cross storylines that we tell is also excellent. My the one thing when I did realize that Impact is now going to be like working with AEW, my immediate thought, and like I couldn't help it, my immediate thought, I was like, damn it, of course this happens like after you fired Tessa Blanchard.
Yeah, I thought that too. Like, this would have been a really great way to have Tessa, but
if they could have done this with Tessa, like, god, you could have put AEW's women's division on the map.
I mean, we would have had the champion versus champion match of Kenny versus Tessa, which would
have, oh my god,
been really good.
That'd have been an incredible match.
That'd have been the all-stars of intergender wrestling, yes, like up against each other.
But alas.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm gonna watch Impact next week, which is not something I've said since high school.
I gotta find
like
a way to watch Impact. I think I'm gonna have to Twitch it. We'll see what's up.
So I think that about does it for us on this mini emergency episode.
Yes.
Is there anything you want to plug, Tyler?
I got nothing. Stay tuned. Wrestling's awesome right now.
Yeah. I'm gonna say I have a new website that is almost finished, but I'll tell you can go look at it right now. AndrewKiberline.com is now my writer's website, because I've been having some writing contest success recently. So if you want to read, there are samples of all of these short scripts that are now like award-winning short scripts that you can read on my website. So go to AndrewKiberline.com.
And if I can plug something and also be an example to Andrew's incredible writing, go listen to the most recent episode of our friend Matthew Schott's podcast,
The Adaptation Game.
Yes, Andrew is on there, and they basically they fantasy book an ending to The Simpsons that will bring you to tears.
I was tasked with like a pitch how they should end The Simpsons, and I was like, oh boy. So
it will bring you to tears. I guarantee
that was my goal, with a tear in my eye. All right. Well, thank you, Tyler, for convening for this emergency episode. Thank you, audience, for listening. And as always, we're going to leave you with the words of the immortal Tony Schiavone. It's Sting!
I was going to follow it up with a Sting thing, but yeah, you got it.
Are you going to do the war cry?
No, I can't. I'm not home right now.